Chapter 16. The more you rescue, the more they sink. Now, before we jump into this chapter, I just want to say something. I don't know what's happening in your life right now, but I do know this. Someone that you care about is struggling. And I want you to know you have the power to meet this moment. You do. And so do they. I have no idea what you've been through in your life, and I don't know what you're facing right now. But I do know this. You have way more power than you think. And the let them theory is going to help you anytime in your life when you are in a situation where someone that you care about is struggling. And I'm going to offer everything that we're going to talk about in these next two chapters and in this section of the book to you for you to use. Anytime you're starting to feel like someone else's struggles are becoming yours. And I know what you may be thinking. Mel, let them? I'm supposed to just let adults be adults, but what if the person I'm trying to change or help is in serious trouble? What am I supposed to do? Just let them spiral? Let them drink and drive? Of course not. And one of the reasons why I felt compelled to talk about how you use the let them theory when someone in your life is spiraling is because I saw this question over and over and over again as the let them theory started to spread around the world. And so in this chapter, you and I are going to unpack these situations. We're going to talk about the difference between supporting someone and enabling them. You're going to meet world-renowned experts in psychiatry and human behavior and neuroscience, and we are going to build on everything that you just learned. Because the hardest thing in the world that you're going to have to accept is that adults only change when they feel like it. And when you're in a situation where somebody is spiraling in front of your face, you are going to want to do anything to try to force them to change. And it will backfire. And I'm going to walk you through this, and you're going to hear all the expert advice, and then it's going to be up to you to decide what you're going to do. Because these situations are deeply personal. They are all very different. Only you are going to know what's the right level of support and when it's time to pull back. And this isn't easy, because a lot of the time when somebody's struggling, they're hiding it from you. I mean, if someone's doing something dangerous or self-destructive, you don't just let them. You step in, take the keys, or you do whatever's necessary to help them because your response might just save their life. That's the let me part. Let me help. Whether that's calling for help or calling the police or driving them to detox or staying with them at their house until they're in a safe place. Of course you're going to help them. But the problem is that most people who are struggling hide it from you. They're not doing drugs right in front of you. They're lying to you about it. They're putting on a brave face at work, but secretly at home, they're struggling with crippling depression. And that's part of the challenge when someone's struggling, is not knowing the extent to which they have been until it's really serious or it's too late. And I guarantee you, there's at least one person in your life right now who is struggling immensely and you have no idea. And maybe that person is you. When someone's struggling, they have a lot of shame. And it's easy to be in denial about how serious it is. They probably already feel like a burden. And they're telling themselves that they're letting everyone down. I mean, that's exactly what I did when I was struggling. In fact, I didn't tell any of my friends the extent of the problems I was facing, from the drinking to how in debt Chris and I were, to the liens on the house, to the shame that I felt, to the toxic behavior that I engaged in for years, absolute years. So I completely relate to this, and I bet you do too if you think about moments in your life when you were struggling. And that's also why people don't ask for help. I didn't ask for help. I didn't open up. And you probably didn't either. You figured, oh, this will get better. I'll just handle it. I don't want to be a burden. Well, that's what the people that you care about are doing too. And this is difficult. It is so difficult. In some ways, I think it's easier when you're the one struggling. It's almost harder when you're watching somebody that you love struggle and just evaporate in front of you. for me personally, when one of my kids is really struggling or when Chris had just devastating depression, you just feel powerless. And I'm sure you felt the same thing if you've watched somebody that you love struggle with mental health or crippling grief or an addiction. I mean, it's just excruciating, isn't it? And here's an even harder truth. Not everyone is ready to get better, be sober, do the work, use their tools, or face their issues head on. And not everyone can. And as much as you may love someone and believe in them and would do anything in the world to make their pain go away. You know, I had a friend tell me once, I just wish I could trade places with them. I would take this pain. If I could free them of it, I would do anything. I understand. But the truth is, you can't want someone else's sobriety, healing, or health more than they do. And in this section of the book, you and I are going to unpack a very difficult topic, and we're going to do it with the help of world-renowned experts in psychiatry, addiction, mental illness, psychology. It's absolutely fascinating what you're about to learn, and it's also a very hard thing to hear. See, what the experts are going to tell you, and me, is that in our attempts to help other people, we may unknowingly be preventing other adults from finding their strength to face their struggles. The more you try to rescue someone from their problems, the more likely they will continue to drown in them. Allowing someone to face the natural consequences of their actions is a necessary part of healing. The fact is, adults only get better when they're ready to do the work. And here's what makes this challenging. You're going to be ready for them to do the work way before they are. It sounds harsh, but it's true. So you and I are going to take absolutely everything that we've learned so far as we've talked about the Let Them theory since the very beginning of this audiobook. We're going to take everything about relationships, friendship, the science of motivation, and human nature, and we're going to build on it to show you how those truths apply even in the most difficult situations. And you're also going to learn a brand new approach to supporting someone through their struggles, which is grounded in this really hopeful and optimistic belief that the person that you love can do the work to get better. They don't need to be rescued because they are stronger and more capable than even they believe. But before we jump in, I have one big disclaimer. There is a huge difference between supporting an adult who is struggling and supporting a child who is struggling. When you're dealing with a child, you're responsible. You're responsible for their emotional, financial, mental, and physical support, period. Think about it like you're the pilot. You're the one driving the bus. And we're going to talk about that in this chapter. And I also want to remind you that at the very end of the book in the appendix, there is a free guide that you can download on using the Let Them theory with kids in your life. And so let me say that disclaimer one more time. There's a major difference between supporting an adult who is struggling and supporting a child who is struggling. When you're dealing with a child who is struggling, you are responsible for their emotional, financial, mental, and physical support. When you're dealing with an adult, you're not. The hard truth about healing. As you and I have talked about, pressuring someone to change creates resistance to changing. And that becomes even more important to understand when you're dealing with a situation where someone is struggling. Because your frustration and judgment is just going to make things worse. And the higher the stakes, the more shame and the more paralysis the other person already feels. The fact is, someone only heals when they feel ready to heal. And if they haven't, it's because they're not ready. The higher the stakes, the more shame and paralysis the other person feels. One of the hardest things for me to embrace when I've watched people that I love struggle is that the struggle is internal. And they're not going to get better for you or their kids or even their family. They have to want to get better for themselves. And that's a very hard thing to wrap your brain around. You may not understand it. You may think that you would act differently if you were in the same situation. But none of that matters, because all of your opinions just translate to judgment. And what have you learned? Your judgment of the other person and what you think they should do is part of the problem, because it translates to pressure. And so one of the things I want to say before we jump into the research and the let them theory is you need an outlet for your judgment and for your stress and for your frustration, because it's valid to feel how you feel. You need a therapist or a friend or a family member, somebody who you can just talk to or vent at, because it's not going to help to aim all this at the other person. In times of struggle, you're going to learn over and over that the other person needs acceptance. And the thing you have to accept is that they're going to struggle a lot. Let them struggle. Because people only heal when they're ready to do it for themselves. These are deeply personal and difficult battles, and they can only be fought by the person when they're ready to fight. And if you think about times when you've been struggling, you struggled for quite a while, didn't you? Before you galvanized the will to change. I did. I laid in bed for months, just marinating in fear and depression, before I was like, enough, Mel, enough. And it's very hard to understand that you can't make someone else fight their demons. You can't make them get sober. You can drive them to detox, but you can't make them do the work. You can't make someone financially responsible. You can keep giving them money all you want, but you can't control what they do with it. And you can't make someone heal. Yes, they need your love and support. And here's the hard part. They do not need to be rescued. I will say this again. The more you try to rescue someone from their problems, the more likely they will continue to drown in them. And the more you judge someone for their behavior or their inability to get better, the better they're going to get at lying to you about it. So it's imperative that you and I realize that rescuing someone isn't supporting them. And enabling someone's self-destructive behavior, that's not love. And it was really hard for me to understand. Okay, I get it, but what exactly is the difference between support and enabling? So let's just unpack these. According to the experts, enabling is when you justify or support someone's problematic behaviors because you think you're helping them, or you're just thinking this is easier for you to just take care of this. For example, it can include things like giving money to an adult child who's not using it responsibly. They're not looking for a job and they're just spending all the money buying things. That's enablement. It can look like covering for people because they were out drinking last night, or making excuses for your spouse's anger, or ignoring the problem and not having the hard conversation because you want to just avoid conflict because it's easier. Often, loving someone is going to require you to let them learn the hard way. Sometimes reclaiming your power means not fixing everyone else's problems or making excuses for their behavior or making their life easier as it's making your life harder. Because when you enable others with your money, your words, your actions, you're not fostering independence and change. You're hindering their healing. You're prolonging their suffering, their debt, their breakdown, and in turn, your own. And I understand. I've been guilty of crossing the line and enabling people's problematic behavior, and I did it because I thought I was making things easier. But you're actually making their recovery and their self-improvement harder. And the experts are going to help us understand why this is true and how the let them theory is going to help you. Allowing other adults to face and feel the natural consequences of their actions is one of the single most important steps of someone's healing process. And the let them theory is going to teach you that helping other people doesn't mean solving their problems. It means giving them the space, support, and tools to do it for themselves. I want you to think of healing as a game that the people you love have to choose to play. Because offering support, it's kind of like throwing a ball to someone. You can toss the ball to them over and over, but they have to choose to catch it and then run down the field. Enabling is when you grab the ball and try to run it down the field every time they won't catch it. Let them drop the ball. Let me stop throwing it. Let me resist the urge to pick it up and run down the field. Let me stop lying about what is happening. Let me accept the fact that they're not ready to change. I understand that this is hard. It's true. One of the hardest things in the world is to watch someone that you love spiral. I'm not a heartless person, and I've lost too many people that I love to the diseases of hopelessness and addiction. I wish they would have caught the ball. I do. But no amount of wishing can bring them back or make someone who's struggling do the work to get better. All you can do is recognize the situation you're in. And if they're unwilling to catch the ball, at some point you have to stop throwing it. And here's what I want to remind you if you're in that situation with someone right now. You know, deep in your soul, that the second they're ready to do the work, the second they're ready to catch that ball, you will be waiting to throw it to them. You're not going anywhere. You're just going to change your approach. Because adults heal when they're ready to do the hard work. And as I've said, you cannot want somebody's sobriety or their healing or their financial freedom or their ambition or their happiness more than they do. And you are going to be ready for your loved ones to get better way before they're ready, which is why you need to remain in control of your response to the situation. You're not dealing with someone who is capable of rational thought or healthy decision-making right now. You're just not. And this is always true when you're dealing with a child because their brains are not fully formed, which is why you cannot allow a child to drive their own healing. According to the experts, the human brain, from a developmental perspective, doesn't fully mature until you're 25 years old. Legally, you're an adult at 18, but from a neuroscience perspective, someone between the ages of 18 and 25 still needs guidance. So you have to be the adult in the room, getting the professional help and steering what is happening and setting up the guardrails with your young adults. With someone who's over the age of 25, it's different. They're responsible for their own healing, and they are also capable of it. And that's an important point. See, when we see people who are struggling in our lives, we see them as incapable. The let them theory is going to change your entire mindset. Imagine a world where the person who's struggling is capable of getting better. Imagine a world where the person that you love is capable of doing the work. What's true about any human being who's struggling, I don't care how young or old they are, they are in a pure survival mode from a neurological standpoint, particularly if someone is spiraling from depression or addiction or facing a tragedy or dealing with trauma. They're in a chronic state of fight, flight, or freeze. And this is why things get painful and tricky, because you can't get them out of survival mode. I want to remind you of everything that we covered way back in the first section of the book about stress and the amygdala and everything that you learned from Dr. Aditi. You can't climb up into somebody's head and flip off their amygdala. There are things you can do. You can soothe someone in the moment by giving them a hug or sitting with them while they cry or listening until they feel calm and present. But you can't get them out of a chronically stressed state. They're going to have to do the work to get themselves there. And everything that you and I have already talked about in the chapters around managing stress and influencing other people to change and the wiring of the brain, it all applies here. Remember Dr. K and how he taught you that human beings are hardwired to move towards what feels easier and pleasurable right now? And we are also hardwired to avoid whatever is painful and hard. And I'm reminding you of this because this is the core piece of research that you need to understand when it comes to someone doing the hard work to get better. Because let's talk about this. If you've ever been depressed like I have, what feels easier? Staying in bed, avoiding everything, When you're grieving, it's easy to think that you're never going to get through this. When you're struggling, reaching for a drink eases the pain. That's why people that you love, or even you, can find yourself struggling with the same demons for years. They would love to get better. They probably doubt they can. I know that's how I've felt. I mean, in periods of my life where I've struggled with severe postpartum depression, I mean, I'm talking the really scary kind. I couldn't be left alone with our daughter Sawyer for the first 8 weeks of her life. That's how bad it was. I was terrified I'd never get better. Or when I've struggled with crippling anxiety, that was one of my just many fears about it, that I would never climb out of this. And that's why the process of getting better always feels worse in the beginning. That's why people avoid it. And they'll act out in ways that just don't make any sense. I once heard an addiction specialist say something that I've never forgotten, and I want to share it with you. They told me, no one gets sober until being drunk is more painful than facing the things you're running from. And to put it in the words of Dr. K in The Science of Motivation, no one gets sober until being drunk is more painful and harder than doing the work to get sober. It makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, hearing that made sense to me. And I wanted to share it with you because it helps you move from this place of judgment and frustration into a place of understanding and compassion, because that's what someone who's struggling needs. And the other thing that they need, that we learned from Dr. K, is they need to feel pain in order to galvanize their own will and desire and strength to change. This is true about any struggle. It's true about losing weight. It's true about drinking. It's true about depression. At some point, you have to feel the pain of it in order to say, I got to change. Because no one heals, for example, from an eating disorder until restricting is more painful than facing the issues that they're running from. No one faces a sex addiction until hiding it is more painful than telling the truth. And what every expert I spoke to in researching this book said over and over and over again is that struggle is a critical part of the human experience, and it's one of the most necessary elements of someone choosing to get better. It actually has a purpose. And notice the word I used, choosing. That's the word the experts kept saying to me. Someone who is struggling is running away from problems and numbing pain. Healing is a choice. This fact creates a problem for you and me, because you and I are always going to feel this tension between just letting someone struggle and at the exact same time, desperately wanting to make their pain go away. I've made this mistake. I've thought, if I could just make their life easier, if I could just make change easier, right? Then it would happen. Wrong. Honestly, it's the exact same dynamic we were talking about with my friend and her husband. You think the hinting or the gifts or paying for things is going to automatically make the change happen. It doesn't. Because the change has to come from within them. They have to have a reason. And there's a huge difference between trying to make someone's pain go away and offering support that allows them to do the work themselves. And what I find to be very difficult about this is that every situation is completely different. And you're going to have to figure out what support looks like for you on a day-by-day, case-by-case, conversation-by-conversation basis. And I'm going to keep saying it because it's true. These painful experiences are part of the motivational circuitry that Dr. K taught us about. In other words, if it's easier to avoid the problem, they're never going to face it. If it's easier to numb yourself, you're never going to get sober. If it's easier to just keep borrowing money for you, why would they look for a job? Let people learn from life. One of the experts that I spoke with in researching this book is an amazing human being by the name of Dr. Robert Waldinger. Dr. Waldinger is a practicing psychiatrist and a psychoanalyst. He is also a clinical professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, and he is the director of the Harvard Study for Adult Development, which is the single longest study ever done on adult development and what makes a happy and healthy life. It's been going on for 86 years. And Dr. Waldinger addressed this topic specifically when I spoke with him. This is exactly what he said. Let people learn from life. Don't shield them from the consequences of what they choose. If someone says, I don't really want to get a job. Okay, well, how are you going to pay your rent? There are lots of things we can do to help people meet the challenges of life by not shielding them from the challenges of life. I want to say that again because that's important. There are lots of things we can do to help people meet the challenges of life by not shielding them from the challenges of life. And this often happens in the realm of addiction with loved ones. Dr. Waldinger says, we have to let people deal with the pain of losing a job or losing a partner because they're addicted to some substance. Don't try to run in and make it all better. When we let people face the real-world consequences of the choices they make, they hopefully learn from them. Maybe they need to spend a night in jail. Maybe they need to lose their job or their family. Maybe you need to take them out of college. Maybe they need to live with you because they need family around them. Maybe they're so far gone, they are going to be homeless. And it's not just in the most extreme cases like addiction and severe mental illness. This same principle applies when someone that you love is struggling with homesickness, anxiety, or self-doubt. And I've struggled with all of those things, and I've also been the mother to three children who have struggled with them. So I know a lot about this, and I've made a lot of mistakes. And so I reached out to another amazing expert. Her name is Dr. Luana Marquez. Dr. Marquez is a clinical psychologist and lecturer at Harvard Medical School. And she told me, avoidance is the habit and coping mechanism that you're going to see when someone is confronted. Because when your loved ones have something going on that scares them or that makes them anxious or that they are afraid they can't get through, they're going to avoid it. They'll avoid situations, they'll avoid conversations, and they'll avoid making behavior changes that feel hard. And as you're learning, it's human nature and basic human wiring to just move toward what feels easy and to move away from facing what's difficult. And so we're going to dig into this knee-jerk kind of coping thing that we all do of just avoiding things. And it's really important for you and me to just keep embracing the facts here. Because you're going to need to approach these situations with a very rational and science-backed approach. And that's why you're going to love this. Stop avoiding the problem. So I'm going to give you an example from my life when one of my kids was struggling, and I did not handle this the right way. I was full-on enabling. I made the situation way worse. I wish I had had the let them theory. I wish I had had Dr. Marquez in my back pocket. I wish I would have done what you're about to learn. Because in my attempts to lessen my daughter's anxiety, you know what I did? I ended up making it way worse. You heard that correctly. I am owning the fact that I made my daughter's anxiety worse. And while this book is really about adult relationships, the laws of human nature apply to parenting young adults as well. So just remember, when you're a parent, you are responsible for your child's physical, mental, and emotional needs. You have a responsibility to step in, to be rational, to put up the guardrails, to make the hard decisions. You do. And I didn't do this correctly. And so let me tell you the story. When our daughter was in middle school, she had a terrifying bout of anxiety. It would start to rev up all day long, and it would ultimately culminate in her waking up in the middle of the night and not wanting to be alone in her room. she would come down to our bedroom, and I made a huge mistake of welcoming her into our bed for the first couple nights. And every time I said it was okay for her to sleep in our room, what was I doing? I was enabling. I was helping her avoid the anxious feelings. And I didn't know that. Like, I just thought I was making things easier for her. But what I didn't realize is that I was actually making it harder for her to face whatever was underneath that anxiety. And every single night, it was like clockwork. She would wake up just before midnight. She would wander down the stairs. And look, I would try to get up and reassure her, but she was so anxious, she would refuse to go back upstairs alone. She would act all irrational and start crying. And eventually, she just wore me down. And after several nights of her climbing into my bed, you want to know what I did? I actually created a little bed on the floor of my room for her. You want to know how long this went on? 6 months. 6 months. Every single night for 6 months. She would wake up when she felt anxious. She would come down the stairs and she would sleep on the floor of our room. My husband was so mad at me. He was upset that I was handling it this way. Then he would try to be the tough guy and then I would start crying. Like, it was a nightmare. Absolute nightmare. And this is what Dr. Marquez meant when she explained that avoidance is a coping mechanism when someone is struggling. Now, our daughter was scared to sleep in her room, so she was avoiding it. By allowing her to sleep on the floor of our room, I was allowing her to avoid facing it. And I made her anxiety worse. Every day when I said, oh, you can just sleep on the floor of our room, you know what I was telling her with my actions? I believe you're not strong enough to face this. And so I want to come back to what I said to you earlier. Imagine a world where you believe that somebody has the ability to face something. Imagine a world where things get hard and someone gets anxious and you believe that they are strong enough to face it. That's amazing, isn't it, to think of it that way? Because honestly, I didn't think she was strong enough to face it, and my actions proved it, which only made her anxiety worse. Now, this may not seem like a big deal, but it's a really big deal. Because over the next few years, her anxiety just got worse and worse and worse. Why? Because I had helped her learn how to avoid facing it. I had taught her that anytime you feel anxious, honey, just run away from your feelings. Just get somebody else to take care of this. And that only made it worse, and it made her impulse to run away from life stronger. Everything made her anxious. Going to school, sitting in the car alone, sleeping at a friend's house, going to guitar practice, I had to sit in the room. Any small, normal moment of nerves would just escalate into an anxiety attack where she needed me. In fact, it got so bad that I flew home from a vacation with my husband because she was inconsolable. And our babysitter had no idea how to handle her. And her anxiety is what brought me home. And I didn't know how to handle it either. And I take full responsibility for this. I blame myself. I'm the parent. I allowed both of us to avoid facing this difficult situation head on. You want to know what I was doing? I was rescuing her. When the truth is, she had the strength, the ability, and the power to work through her anxiety and her fears, and to learn how to be okay whenever she was feeling anxious or uncomfortable. It wasn't until Chris and I had finally had enough that we took her to see a therapist. And that's where we learned that the only way that someone gets stronger is by facing the things they feel too weak to face. And it's exactly what the Let Them Theory is going to help you do. Because the fact is, it's normal to wake up in the middle of the night and feel anxious. But it didn't have to spiral into a 6-month ordeal. It didn't have to explode into an issue that we dealt with for years and years, where anxiety became the predominant problem in my daughter's life for literally the next decade. You are way more capable than you give yourself credit for, and so is the person you love. You can't control whether or not someone else feels anxious. You can't control whether or not they're going to get up in the middle of the night and come down to your bedroom. But you can always control what you think, you do, and you say in response. And when someone you love is struggling, I want you to picture yourself as the loving supporter, putting your arm around their shoulder and offering support and nurturing as you encourage them to face what they're avoiding. It's the only way they're going to get better, because you can't control their anxious reactions. Remember this? This is all part of what we learned about another person's emotions. Your power is in your response. And so here's how you can use the let me part to offer that support. Let me validate what they're feeling. In my case, I could have said, "Oh, honey, I'm so sorry you feel so scared. It's so scary, isn't it, when you wake up and have those feelings? Oh, I know." Let me separate my emotions from theirs. "This is hard for me too. It's really hard for me to see you so sad." Let me comfort the person I love who's struggling. And I'll tell you what, a hug always works wonders. I think it's even more powerful than words sometimes, just to put your arms around someone and just let them cry. And then let me support them by assuring them that they have within themselves the ability to do something that feels hard. And then stand by their side as they do the hard thing, which for me meant getting up every night in the middle of the night and walking my daughter back to her room and putting her back in her bed. And I'm not going to lie. For the first few nights of following this therapist's advice, I felt like a monster. I mean, she would cry and she would plead, and then I'd try to put my arm around her and she'd go all stiff. If you've ever had a kid do that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I wanted to fire the therapist. I wanted to just throw in the towel. I thought, this is so stupid. It's just so much easier to allow her to sleep on the floor, and that way I can get sleep too. Eventually, this is all just going to blow over, right? Wrong. It doesn't just blow over. It gets worse. And I'm proud of myself, because as hard as it was to follow this advice, I didn't throw in the towel. And here's what was crazy about doing the hard thing, is that this started to turn around in about 5 days. It didn't make her anxiety disappear overnight. Because anytime she tries something new, whether it's moving into college or moving to a new city or taking a risk in her career, the anxiety comes up. And she immediately calls me. And then I follow the exact same advice of supporting her and reminding her that these feelings are a sign that she's mentally well, these are normal feelings, and that I believe in her ability to face them. And it was kind of amazing to me how quickly a broken dynamic between the two of us and her struggle started to turn in the right direction. Because as she's seeing herself face something that's scary, she's discovering her strength. And I will say, it was not easy to tuck her into bed and then stand outside her door until I heard her drift back to sleep. And in the morning when I woke up and I had gotten a terrible night's sleep because I had been woken up so many times by her, I was in a frustrated mood. I was mad at her. It was not good. And some nights she would wake up again and come down again, not once, but a few more times. And I would just take a deep breath. Gosh, I wish I'd had the let them theory back then. But I would just take the time to comfort her, put my arm around her, walk her back up those stairs to help her face the feelings and emotions she was avoiding. Look at people's struggles not as a sign of weakness, but as an opportunity for you to support them in discovering their strength. That's what's available to you right now. Because I learned the hard way that if somebody starts to believe that they're too weak to face their own struggles, not only will their problems and struggles get worse, but they will never actually tap into the possibility of their lives. I'm going to keep reminding you, imagine a world where you believe the person that you love is capable of doing the work. They are capable of facing their fears. They are capable of moving through this moment. Because the alternative is, if you always swoop in and you rescue someone the moment they're struggling, guess what you're training them? You're training them to expect you to do it when life gets hard. But if they see themselves moment by moment, day by day, facing the hard and scary things in life with you by their side, you're teaching them that they're capable of doing the things that are way beyond what they see for themselves. Stop rescuing people from their problems and start acting as if you believe in their ability to face them. Your actions are the loudest and truest form of communication and belief in someone. So when you act in a way that supports someone in facing what scares them, your behavior says, "I believe in you. You can do this, and I'm going to be right here by your side as you face it." Supporting people through struggle, it's very hard to do. It's draining. It takes a lot of time and a lot of patience. It is so frustrating. And that's why we resort to enabling and rescuing people. It's much easier to let them sleep on the floor or transfer to another school or quit their job or ignore it or hope it goes away. Or the most common way people enable others, throw money at it. So the question becomes, how do you support someone effectively? Great question. And you and I are going to walk through it step by step in the next chapter.